And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And I'm Uncle Dennis, and we're in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Today is Thursday, May 7th, 2015. Want to remind you that it's good to have a pencil and paper handy when you're listening to this show, because you never know when something might come up that you want to write down: name, addresses, date of birth, web pages, email addresses, dates, times, places, something you might want to remember and take action on. Let's start off with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team, is having a restoration this Saturday, May 9th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. With lots of volunteer enthusiasm, we had made a significant dent in removing invasive non-native French broom from the park, maintaining our current work sites, and making huge progress on the old-growth broom sites. This Saturday's broom bash may be our final project at the ranch before the lack of rain. Well, it rained today. Maybe they'll have a reprieve. And the heat of summer make it difficult to pull and unbearably hot. Despite these obstacles, many unique and rare species of flora and of fauna eke out their existence in the Sandhills habitat of Quail Hollow. I hope you've had an opportunity to visit this special place and enjoy its beauty. We'll return in late fall to start our next round of broom eradication and maintenance. How to get to Quail Hollow Ranch? Well, go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz. As you come down into Felton, make a right at the light. Go up East Ziani Road about 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow. Half a mile up on the right is the park entrance, and they will meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left-hand side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native and wild places and the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, and it might be a little cloudy, but who knows? It might be pleasant, but if it does get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and some water. For more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or by email, redwoodrn, that's redwdrn, at packbell.net. Or go to the webpage at www.cruzcnps.org, that's CRUZCNPS.org. And coming up in later on in May in Indiana, there'll be a direct action training at this year's Heartwoods, and that's their 25th anniversary. And I found this news published by Glacier's Edge Earth First on the Earth First Newswire. From May 22nd through the 25th, Heartwood will be holding its 25th anniversary Forest Council in Paoli, Indiana. For the first time ever, a concurrent direct action training will also be occurring alongside the Forest Council. The direct action training will provide participants with the tools of campaign strategy and various tactics geared towards stopping bad people from doing bad things, such as logging, extraction, pipelines, the state, you know, the usual culprits. Participants in this tract will learn how these training will learn how these skills can be used in conjunction with other campaign tactics to win. Expect lively discussion and even more hands-on experience. Pre-registration is recommended to help trainers prepare accordingly. To register and learn more, visit www.heartwood.org. That's HEARTWOOD.org. Limited work, trade, and financial assistance is available to help defray costs. If you need more information and you want to email them, it's glaciersedge@riseup.net. glaciersedge@riseup.net. And for 25 years, Heartwood has coordinated vital campaigns for forest protection, launched dynamic new organizations, gathered activists together for education and enjoyment in beautiful places, and built a community of people across the Heartwood region to help each other to protect the places they love. And once again, that webpage, www.heartwood.net. www.ncpsc.org and their 25th anniversary gathering, May 22nd through the 25th in Paoli, Indiana. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife reminds the public that suction dredge mining remains unlawful in California. And this is from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. In 2009, California enacted a statutory moratorium on suction dredge mining throughout the state. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife reminds suction dredge miners the moratorium for use of motorized suction dredge equipment remains in effect. In addition, possession of any such equipment within 100 yards of any river system or lake remains unlawful. Suction dredge mining is a method for vacuuming gravel from rivers, streams, and lakes to sort through the sediment produced, usually through a sluice box, to recover gold and other precious metals. Beginning in 2005 and thereafter, with the moratorium taking effect in 2009, several lawsuits were filed to challenge the moratorium and the updated suction dredge regulations adopted by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife in 2012. Legal challenges to the regulations and the moratorium are in progress in both San Bernardino County Superior Court and the California Supreme Court, but unless directed otherwise by the courts through a final order and consistent with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife obligations under the California Constitution, wildlife officers will continue to enforce the current prohibition on suction dredge mining in California. Currently, there is some misleading information being provided by unofficial internet websites suggesting the legal matters are resolved, the moratorium is no longer in effect, and miners may lawfully mine using motorized suction dredge equipment in California. That information is inaccurate. California Division of Fish and Wildlife is concerned that this misinformation may lead some miners to return to operating suction dredges, where they will be at risk of citation, arrest, and possible forfeiture of their equipment. When the legal proceedings conclude, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife will notify the public of the final outcome and changes to the law, if any. For more information, go to www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's wildlife.ca.gov, and leave that suction dredge in the shed. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. Montana and Yellowstone National Park are developing a new plan to replace the Interagency Bison Management Plan, an agreement which has facilitated the removal of nearly 6,000 of America's wild buffalo since its inception in the year 2000. The new plan, which is in its scoping and beginning phases, puts forth a number of preliminary alternatives for managing wild buffalo in Montana. These alternatives offer nothing new and maintain the status quo of hazing, capture, slaughter, quarantine, birth control, and hunting, with little to no benefits for wild migratory buffalo. The Buffalo Field Campaign, on the other hand, is proposing that the agencies evaluate a new alternative that respects wild bison, an alternative to manage wild bison like wild elk in Montana, using the best available science that takes all changed circumstances into consideration. Public comments are being accepted through June 15, 2015. Please go to the Buffalo Field Campaign website to urge Montana and Yellowstone to evaluate this new alternative to manage wild buffalo like wild elk in Montana. Buffalo Field Campaign patrols have been seeing more baby buffalo arrive this past week. Each one is a fresh miracle, a precious gift to the earth. Their moms show enormous pride and are fiercely protective. The bond shared between mom and calf is immediate and strong. It's wonderful to see these tiny, new, and curious creatures explore the wonders of this new world. Don't get too close. Wildflowers are blooming, birds are singing, and waterways sing and ripple like diamonds in the warm spring sunlight. As the baby buffalo explore, their moms give them space to roam a bit, but grunt and call them to take care and stay close if they go too far away or the mamas sense a threat. We always find it amazing that such a small, vulnerable thing will grow into a mighty buffalo. Of most mammals, baby buffalo probably look the least like the enormous, shaggy giants they will grow into. Sadly, most of these baby buffalo don't have an opportunity to live very long before they're descended upon by state and federal employees who are charged with harassing and abusing them using your federal tax dollars. Thursday through Saturday, and again on Tuesday, the hazers were out in force. On Tuesday, a hazing operation began in the South Fork area, literally right after one particular baby buffalo had been born. Its legs were still so wobbly it couldn't yet stand, and its mother had yet to shed the afterbirth. Cindy and Natalie, the patrol closest to these buffalo, alerted the hazers to the delicate pair, and the riders cut them out of a group of five other mom and baby pairs before they hazed the rest of them. Of course, it would have been best if they had not hazed this group at all. Thankfully, this calf will have a bit of chance to get stronger, but alone, mom and calf are highly vulnerable to predators. Eventually, six government employees represented by Yellowstone National Park, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the Montana Department of Livestock commenced hazing nearly 30 wild buffalo with 10 new calves, still pregnant moms, and many others. The majority of the land they were so abusively chased off of is public land that will never host any livestock. The Department of Livestock employees in particular reek of entitlement and authority as they bully these noble native bovines off of lands that cattle will never graze. The calves try so hard to keep up with their mothers, and the mothers try very hard to keep their babies towards the front of the group and as far from the hazers as they can. More than a few bluff charges were given to these agents. The hazers laugh and call out to each other, "Watch out for that one, she's a little cranky." Just days old, the baby buffaloes suffer what their moms and families have had to put up with for the past 6 weeks, only their legs are brand new and not yet fit for stampeding with the herd. On a good day, they display short bursts of energetic play before crumpling to the ground for frequent naps with lots of nursing in between. Instead, they are being run for miles through a river, down dusty gravel roads, through mudflats and forest, with the hazers repeatedly yelling, "Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah," and other reprehensible sounds, forcing them to move, move, move. Sometimes the buffalo stop and look at us as we look through our cameras, our weapons to shed light on this maltreatment of America's last wild buffalo, and they break our hearts with their gazes as though they are pleading with us, why is this happening? What did I do? The Montana Department of Livestock has announced that they intend to chase all wild buffalo out of the Hebgen Basin starting next week. Surely they are going to run into some challenges. The majority of wild buffalo that are in Montana are on buffalo-friendly private land on Horse Butte. Without landowner permission, these employees are not allowed to haze, thanks to Governor Steve Bullock's directive. Buffalo Field Campaign is providing new buffalo safe zone signs for many residents who are very much looking forward to their opportunity to tell the Montana Department of Livestock to go away and leave the buffalo alone. The Buffalo Field Campaign is looking forward to this, too. For more information, go to the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, or you could call them up at 406-646-0070 and see what's up. And if you figure out what you need to send them, send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Once again, you can find all that information and more at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And please remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And a dam-fighting activist has been deported from Cambodia in this story by Rob Harbinson of Monga Bay, as found on the Earth First Newswire. "The reason they are trying to deport me is that they regard me as a fishbone in their throat due to the activism of the Arang Valley," Alex Gonzalez Davidson said in an interview in Kaokong City the week before his deportation. 10,000 hectares of the Arang Valley in the Cardamom Mountains forests of southwest Cambodia are slated to be flooded by a proposed hydroelectric dam across the Che Arang River. The forests of the Cardamom Mountains are some of the most extensive left in Cambodia, which has lost 84% of its primary forest to logging and agriculture since 1990. The Arang Valley is home to at least 31 endangered animal species, including Mother Nature's website. The Arang River is one of the most important breeding sites for the critically endangered Siamese, which is thought to number more than... Boy, something got erased there. Than 1,000 mature individuals worldwide, according to the IUCN. It is also home to the endangered Asian arowana or dragonfish. Can't remember what got erased. Anyway, they're critically endangered. Some 2,000 people also live in the valley, many of them from indigenous Chong tribe. Most of the valley's inhabitants oppose the dam, which would flood their farmlands and force 1,600 of them to move to a relocation site they fear would be inferior to their current homes. The only specific relocation site that has been proposed so far was eventually rejected on conservation grounds because it would have disrupted a critical migration route for the dwindling population of endangered Asian elephants that still remain a foothold in the Cardamom Mountains. Valley residents also opposed it because it had no water access and its steep forested slopes were unsuitable for farming. The dam would supply 108 megawatts of power, presumably to Kokkong Province, where it would be located. A report by the Japan International Cooperation Agency for the Cambodian government concludes the $300 million price tag will result in a high per unit cost of electricity compared with other dams. The government's decision to deny Mr. Gonzalez-Davidson a visa renewal is a perfect example of the government's sustained attempt to quash grassroots advocacy, silence dissent, and ensure an environment where the government can operate with impunity from independent criticism. Says Nally Pilorhe, director of the prominent Phnom Penh-based rights group Cambodian League for the Promotion and Defense of Human Rights. Signed by representatives of 31 civil society groups, the statement was presented to the government at the Parliament Building in Phnom Penh on February 17th. Within the week, 180 activists had traveled to the Arang Valley in solidarity with the local people and out of anger over Gonzalez-Davidson's deportation. The government was also at the work area, sending a parliamentary delegation to convene a meeting with local residents extolling the virtues of the dam. Local residents said they found the heavy presence of military guards surrounding the officials intimidating. Mother Nature observers had their camera phones snatched and the contents deleted by guards for attempting to record the proceedings. Styling his own brand of activism based on nonviolent direct action and the creative use of social media, Alex Gonzalez-Davidson co-founded Mother Nature in October of 2013 with trusted Cambodian activists. His short, quirky videos poking fun at the monkeys in power have become a hit with Cambodians, each one quickly going viral from Mother Nature's Facebook page. Gonzalez-Davidson also became a charismatic public face of the campaign. In a country where television is tightly controlled by the state, it is the internet where much social debate happens. He especially appeals to the youth population yearning for the political freedoms they read about on their smartphones daily. By confronting the regime, Gonzalez-Davidson has become a symbol of their hopes and aspirations. Now he has a following of activists increasingly prepared to challenge decisions made by politicians widely believed to be corrupt and to stand up to laws enforced by judges many consider politically compromised. And a reading here about anti-nuclear resistance in Finland on the Earth First Newswire. And if your Finnish is better than mine, please excuse my pronunciation. The Fennovoima Energy Company is starting to construct a nuclear power plant in Pajoki, a nice, quiet, and small municipality in the northwest of Finland. An action camp has been started in the area to stop the project. During the second half of April, Fennovoima cut 95 hectares, that's about 200 acres, of very special coastal forest at the construction site. They didn't wait for a month for the legal permission to clear-cut the landscape. Instead, Fennovoima started destroying the forest on Wednesday, the 15th of April. The forest was home for several rare birds and other species. Nests of endangered white-backed woodpeckers were destroyed. A very rare white-tailed eagle got disturbed as dozens of machines demolished its neighborhood. The nesting season of many birds had started already. The fast start of the cutting was a shock for many people and organizations. The local Nature Conservation Association, the Bird Protection Association, and the anti-nuclear organization Pro-Hanhikivi that have opposed the Fennovoima complained and demanded to stop the cutting of the forest immediately. In Helsinki, five people from the Hoyo Kajalto Eco Action Group took necessary action and entered the headquarters of Lassila and Takanoja in order to distribute flyers to the workers in their offices, and they refused to leave the building before the cuttings would be stopped. Three people were eventually carried out by police and arrested and released later that day. We, the Hoyo Alto Eco Action Group, had already planned to start a camp at the forest area, but now we had to hurry. On Tuesday morning, the 21st of April at 6 a.m., four people arrived at the Cape of Pahajoki and witnessed the apocalyptic view of dozens of machines killing the forest. During the following 6 days, the cutting machines were working 24/7. We had been in contact with local cabin owners, and now we just waited to get the cabin keys and the occupation camp started. The locals were upset since Fennovoima had been given special permission that made it possible for them to expropriate the land from the locals, which had belonged to their families for generations. The locals knew their cottages on the shore would be emptied on the 31st of May, but they still didn't know what the compensation price for their property would be. The next morning, more people arrived from northern Finland, and plenty of locals arrived to see the clear cuttings. Soon, one person climbed high into a tree in order to occupy a small part of the forest left over to stop it from being cut. At the same time, two cars blocked the road off from cutting machines and security cars. Some people just ran to the machines and placed themselves in front of them so that they were forced to stop the cuttings. When the cops arrived, they got loads of frustrated feedback from Pahajoki people, including one person who had first parked his car to block the road. They reminded the cops that they had never been heard when they complained about the crime of Fennovoima's, but now the cops were there immediately to protect Fennovoima's destruction of the forest for the nuclear power plant. Two people that had blocked the machines were arrested by the cops immediately. The tree and small forest area was occupied successfully for 16 hours. Activists from the Koivalto camp supported the occupation of the tree by bringing warm clothes, food, and clean water. In the night, a heavy snowstorm stopped the occupation of the small forest area, and the activist was forced to leave his position in the tree. The next morning, that small part of the forest was simply cut down. Meanwhile, on the next night in Helsinki, in response to the cutting operations, two vans of the waste company Lassila and Takinoja were burned out completely and a third van damaged in the same fire. That company was responsible for the clear cutting. People in the camp and around it welcomed the news from south joyfully. We didn't hear a negative word about the arsons. In the camp, all kind of little disturbing of the work process became a daily routine. The only road to the cabins goes through the clean cut area and is used by the cutting workers, so people who used the road slowed down the disturbing of the environment whenever there was a log truck or security car on the road. Soon the security company forgot that the road was public and started stopping cars from getting to the shore area where the cottages are and accused us as well as the locals of trespassing in the area. Fennovoima's illegal attempts to try and occupy the Cape while it was still privately owned and publicly accessible lands raised even more anger amongst the residents. On Saturday, the next bigger blockade was carried out by the activists. A forest tractor was stopped and blocked for 6 hours as people jumped onto it, chained, and locked themselves to it. Just a few days later, on Tuesday, a group of four people attempted to block a log truck that was speeding down the road. Three of them stood on the road, prepped with a banner ready to jump upon the truck the moment it slowed down. The optimistic trust in the truck driver created a lethal risk, since the driver made no attempt to stop. The activists had to jump off the road and into the ditch, but one person managed to run after the truck, jump onto it, and climb onto the logs while the truck was still driving. Soon the truck had to stop and the banner was raised. It took several hours before the cops and firemen managed to get him off his position on the truck. And Sea Shepherd USA takes whale wars to the Supreme Court. Sea Shepherd USA, the U.S.-based 501c3 nonprofit marine conservation organization, filed a petition recently asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review an appellate decision holding it in contempt of court based on the activities of foreign groups that opposed illegal Japanese whale hunts. Any business that operates internationally should be alarmed by the ruling at issue here, said Claire Davis, a partner with Lane Powell, the law firm representing Sea Shepherd in the Supreme Court. This case isn't specific to whaling, but instead raises fundamental questions about how aggressively U.S. courts can interfere in the foreign affairs of U.S. businesses. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society seeks review of a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision, finding that it violated an injunction to remain at least 500 yards away from Japanese whaling vessels in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary near Antarctica. The Ninth Circuit asserted jurisdiction over Sea Shepherd through the Alien Tort Statute, a federal statute intended to allow foreign citizens to bring actions in U.S. courts for violations of a small number of universally recognized international laws, usually understood to include acts such as genocide and torture. The Alien Tort Statute is meant to apply in a very narrow set of circumstances, which do not include environmental activism, said Davis. This decision authorizes U.S. courts to invent new international law and apply it to the activity of all U.S. businesses abroad. It sets a welcome mat in front of the U.S. courts for any plaintiff's lawyer or foreign actor wishing to attack a U.S. business based on grudges arising anywhere around the globe. The legal dispute arises from Japan's long-running violation of the International Whaling Commission's ban on commercial whaling. Since the 1980s, Japan has granted scientific whaling permits for Japanese organizations to kill more than 1,000 whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary each year, including humpback whales and endangered fin whales. Last year, the International Court of Justice declared Japan's research rationale to be a sham and said that its whale hunts are in violation of international law. Sea Shepherd's campaign to stop Japanese whale hunts has been documented in the Emmy-nominated Animal Planet series, Whale Wars. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 9 o'clock. If you want to hear a rebroadcast, please tune in to Free Radio tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP 90.3 FM, Radio Free Moscow's new high power frequency at 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights. And you can try tuning in to NorthbySouthRadio.com, formerly Radio Free Edmonton. They're featuring a pop-up radio without a schedule, but check them out, NorthbySouthRadio.com. You might find us there at any time. Or you could go to RadioForAll.net. There you can listen online or download this or any previous edition of the Earth First Update, RadioForAll.net. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.